This is the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario, and today I am speaking with Fallon Thomas.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Very okay. Good. Now I can.
Just making sure.
So, where are you from?
I'm from New Haven, born and raised. I've lived here most of my life. I left for a little while to pursue education, but New Haven through and through.
Okay. Where were you born?
I was born at Yale New Haven Hospital. And so essentially I grew up in West Hills, 18 South Genesee Street to be exact. Then Westfield Manor, what was it, 4 Wayfair Street. And then my mother became a homeowner on Winchester Avenue. And I lived here until I went off to college. So all New Haven schools, New Haven public schools. I went to Beecher, I went to Sheridan, I went to Hill House. Shout out to the house. So many distinguished alumni in the city. I love it.
Tell me a little bit about your mom.
Man, that's my girl. She's my plus one. So you see me at all these events. She's there with me. You know, mostly raised in a single-parent household. My grandparents were very present and influential in my upbringing. And I would say my freshman year of college, my mom got married. So my stepdad has been along for the ride since then. But my mom, she's definitely my rock, my supporter. I would say we grew up together. I was the only child until I was about 7 years old. And then my brother came along, who's my bestie, my little big brother, as I like to call him, Austin.
All right. Tell me a little bit. Give me a story about your mom and what kind of ethics did you witness growing up that plays a part in your life now?
So my mom's name is Cheryl Page, and she's such a sweet person. I mean, you know, definitely a person that grounds me. You know, she was someone who, you know, gave me structure, but also let me find my way. So she wasn't, like, overbearing. And so I think that, you know, she always had me think about what I was going to do, if there were any consequences involved in that. So I appreciate her guidance and her support. There's so many stories. Like, I can't really pinpoint one story, but just how she's just been there through every step of my life. I remember when I went to grad school and I moved to Chicago, and she dropped me off. And the next day we talked, and she said, well, if you would have called me and said, I want to come back home today, I would have turned around and brought you back home. Knowing that, you know, she helped me get my apartment and set me all up and drove me from New Haven to Chicago. That's just the type of mom she was. And, you know, I'm just happy and honored to be able to make her proud, have her come along with me to community events and things and hear people say good things about, you know, how I engage in the community and who I am as a person. And I think it's a reflection of her. And I think she feels good about the way she raised
me. You got good grandparents that were there supporting your mom?
Yes, very much so. I feel like I'm an old soul, and that's because I spent a lot of time at my grandparents' house. And, you know, they instill hard work, diligence, being a person of your word. That's something that they always talked about. If you commit to something, you got to follow it all the way through. And I think I still carry that ethic with me today. When I go through like different organizations or things that I'm planning at work, and I'm just like a motivator in a sense, like we got to get it done. And a lot of time people see that as me being somebody that's hard or not flexible, but it's just the way I was raised. So, you know, going to my grandparents' house and pretty much just watching them. So from watching them, like my grandfather, he controlled the TV. So I can sit through golf, I can sit through tennis, I can sit through baseball, I can sit through football. And I like football now, but as a kid, it was just, you know, the main TV was his TV. And if I wanted to spend time, I had to sit there. He would listen to the radio so I could sit and listen to baseball on the radio and follow and understand what was going on. Both of my grandparents were from the South, so they told their stories about how they got to Connecticut, how they met in New York, and their stories inspired me. And I think one of the reasons why I pursued history as a major was really falling in love with the story of the Southern migrant and wanting to understand from many different perspectives how people got to these urban centers and what community and social structures were created once they got here. So my grandfather, he worked at Winchester Repeating Arms. He retired from there. And, you know, just hearing the pride that he had in working there and how he was a veteran, how he got out of World War II, how he came to New Haven and how he would go party in Harlem. And that's how he met my grandmother and he brought her back to Connecticut. And just going down south with them during the summers, like vacationing now, I know people see me and they're like, oh, you vacation all the time, which I don't. But, you know, you'll typically see me going to like an island or something. But the bulk of my childhood was going down south. And that was something that we did, hopping in the car and, you know, whatever map he had or from memory of how to get from New Haven to South Carolina, where my grandmother was from, staying there for a couple of days, going to Georgia, staying with his family for a week or so and coming back to South Carolina. So that was fond memories. And it was like simple living. And, you know, for me, I thought it was just something new. And I remember I would tell my mother, I want to stay. She's like, you don't want to stay. And I was just like, yeah, because it was different from city living to be in a place where, you know, it was farms and just fields and animals and walking to the store, like what would seem like miles, sitting on a porch and watching my great grandmother wave to everybody. And I'm like, do you know them? She's like, no. And I'm like, why are you waving? But that's just city stuff. And then, you know, to have my aunt, who would ask me to, like, you know, speak in front of her friends because I was proper and I was from up north. And I was just like, oh, okay. Like, I didn't know any better. But, you know, just all of those family traits that were instilled in me. I remember my grandfather's sister, whose name was Aunt Molly, and she was, like, very strict. And when Aunt Molly would come to visit, she would just, like, put people in their place and everything had to be like a certain way. And so now as I operate, and I'm like, man, am I Aunt Molly now? But I remember when she passed and just to see all of the people who were there at her funeral, from her sorority sisters to the Eastern Stars. And I didn't know what that meant at the time. But I knew she had this community of people that were around her and that she was known for being in the community and doing so much. She was an educator. And so now to be in these same organizations and be able to contribute in my time in society, like, you know, it's all connected. And it's between, you know, my family, my historical training that I do what I do now. Mm.
Wow. So your family laid a foundation of this community service. And so what you attribute to them, your now dedication to your community?
I would say so. Like, everybody, you know, that was around me was given. My grandparents were given. So if there were neighbors that needed stuff, you know, they would give to their neighbors with no problem. I remember, like, getting new bikes. My grandfather would fix up my old bike and give it to, you know, my friends, one of my friends that didn't have as much. And I remember he would tell me, if I ever hear you say, that's my bike, I'm going to give them the new bike and you're going to get the old bike back. So I just definitely moved from a place of being humble and just being able to give without acknowledgement and understanding that there are people that may be less fortunate that you never know, you know, where you're going to see them again and how you're going to impact their lives. And there are so many people and I would say organizations that impacted me growing up that all I want to do now is pay it forward.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario, and we're listening to the kind words of the very humble and sweet Fallon Thomas. What teacher moved you in the New Haven school system that really sticks with you today?
I would say there was a couple. I would say elementary, there was Miss Martin. She was like my first grade teacher. And she was a ventriloquist that did, you know, her puppet show. And it was like a Christian puppet show. And I'm pretty sure at that time, you know, it was very lax. You could teach, you know, or talk about Christianity in the church. So that was interesting to see a teacher, even though I grew up in the church, that be reflected in school. And so, you know, just from their structure, Christianity is something that I remember from her early on and seeing something different. Like you saw a ventriloquist on TV, but you never seen one up close in person. And then I would say Miss King, Miss Sharon King, and Miss King, I would say, followed me throughout my life. And to this day, I still, you know, encounter Miss King. She now has retired from the school system, but works in Hampden Public Schools as a adult ed director. But Miss King was like my third grade teacher. She was my fifth grade teacher. Then I left Beecher and went to Sheridan. And I remember getting my schedule and I just kept seeing King, King, King. And I was like, can't be. So then I get to school on the first day and it's her. And I'm like, what are you doing here? So, you know, she was my sixth grade teacher. So then, you know, graduated middle school, went off to Hill House, got my schedule, counselor, King. I'm like, can't be. Now she's my counselor. So to have someone kind of see me grow up through the school system, she always was someone that was influential. She was younger, so you kind of got that feel of like an urban professional. And, you know, just seeing how women conducted themselves, that's something I remember from her early on. High school, I would say Mr. Gibson. Mr. Gibson, he was, you know, a very dedicated teacher, but he expected so much, meaning that he had a certain amount of rigor that he expected people to arise to occasion. I remember people did not want to be in his class. I was in honors courses at Hill House, so I loved his class. He was a historian, so, you know, it was right in line with the things that I was being taught at home from my grandfather to now hear somebody else tell it from a different perspective, a more academic perspective outside of a life-lived perspective. And just like from my grandfather and from Mr. Gibson, watching documentaries. To this day, I still will watch documentaries on anything. People see my Netflix and they're like, your Netflix is pretty weird. Like, you know, you go from watching something from Mahalia Jackson or JFK or the Beatles. Like, I am a very period piece, you know, person that likes to learn about the different pieces or time periods of history. So Mr. Gibson was very influential in that. And I would also say Dr. Bert Saxon. He was somebody who provided opportunities outside of the traditional academic sense, meaning that his class was a safe space. We had debates. He had a chess team. And, you know, he introduced a lot of my classmates to chess, males. And then we would have trivia. So we had this, like, American ethnic history class. And some days, you know, down days, we would do trivia. And, you know, he would have trivia from history to pop culture to sports. And I just remember always just killing it. Everybody always wanted to be on my team. And early on, he was like, why did you know so much about sports? And I was like, because of my grandfather, just sitting there and listening to that. But he gave me the opportunity, one, to audit classes at Yale. So I took a class at Yale my senior year of high school in psychology. And lo and behold, later did I know that my professor at that time was the president that I worked under for the last 4 years. So that was interesting, fun fact. And then also, too, he gave me the opportunity to go to Phillips Academy, which is a private boarding school in Massachusetts. And that opened my eyes from having an education in a predominantly Black community to then being exposed to other cultures. You know, I met friends who families, you know, they were from Japan and China, and their families sent them to boarding school all year round. So they never knew what it was like to really be home and be with a family. So for me to then get that boarding school experience shortly during the summer, but to understand what it's like to be with family, understand to have the freedom to just live and be a regular student. But it opened my eyes up about diversity and how at first I didn't feel comfortable or felt like I didn't belong in a certain classroom if I was the only one or one of two. And so that helped me to be able to adjust to that type of environment. And for me, I understood that that was what the world was going to be like once I graduated, once I went to college. So that kind of helped to shape what my college experience would be. While I had great mentorship during that time when I was growing up from like people like Audra Morrison, who took me to Morgan State, to her homecomings. And, you know, I had this battle of, do I want to go to a HBCU or do I want to go to a PWI? And, you know, I applied to both. And essentially, I opted to go to Temple University in Philadelphia, where there was a great balance. And I think living on campus, you almost felt like you went to an HBCU. But then when you got into the classroom, you realized you were in a PWI. And it was just one
in the hood.
In the hood. In the hood. And, you know, it's so funny because I think about what, you know, people say. They tell Yale students about don't go this far this way, don't go this far this that way. But I remember that same conversation when I was going to Temple. And I would say maybe for the first 2 years, I didn't really venture too far on my own. Everything was new to me. So, you know, we had the B bus, the Z bus, the Q bus, the O bus. You know, you go to Philly, there's subways, there's buses. There's cabs. I didn't know how to hail a cab. I remember the first time I took a cab from the dorm to the train station because I was coming home. And, you know, the cabbie, I know she kind of figured that I was green and I didn't know where I was going. So she tried to take, like, this whole long way around. And I had taken the cab once before there, so that was, like, my second time. And so she stopped and picked up her brother because she was like, oh, yeah, I don't know how to get there. So we get to the train station, and the bill was like $60, $70. I'm like, well, I took the cab before, and I know it's only $25, and that's all I have. So that's what you're going to get. But just having that experience of, like, living outside of New Haven, you know, meant the world to me. And it definitely helped to shape, one, who I am. But once again, bringing it all back, I studied migration studies at Temple University because Philadelphia was one of the first hubs where Black folks came from the South. And then they already had a rich culture of Black folks that were already there from slavery. So there was a dynamic between the two.
The original Haitian migration. Philadelphia.
From the two to have what they call your old line Black families and then your new migrants. And there was a dynamic between the two of them. So just to study that and to see it in practice and, you know, the physical structures and the organizations, it was something that I'll never forget. But Old City, you know, when I was in school, that was, you know, the party area. So we would be walking right past the Liberty Bell to get to the parties. But rich culture, you know, is something between, you know, that and then what you discover there as far as, like, their Black community is something that I always invite everybody to, you know, to see. It's only a short trip here from New Haven to, you know, experience Philly. I go back every year for a Roots picnic. That's something that I enjoy.
And that has evolved over time. You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Canellaro. This is Fallon Thomas, reminiscing about Philadelphia, the North Side, North Main Street, and West Philly, the Plateau. Lots of culture and a lot of rich history there. And the original culture that I've learned from Philly is no new friends, especially from the locals. They are very...
But I can say that that wasn't the case, you know, in any community where there's a college town, the people take care of those students. So I remember, you know, some of my friends had to move off campus, and I was terrified to move off campus. Like, you were going to live in North Philly? And so, you know, every year I would pray for a good lottery number to keep me on campus. So shout out to a praying grandmother who taught me how to pray and allowed me to get that good number every year. So I did not have to move off of campus, but going to visit friends, I would see how their neighbors would watch out for them. Like, if they came home late, you know, whether they were a wino or whatever, they were checking to see, oh, it's 10 o'clock. You got off of work at 9:30. Where were you? And that's the type of community that was formed in North Philly.
Yeah, and those row houses right on top of each other. So you can hear the neighbor night, yes. Clear as day.
Pretty much.
You went to Chicago also for
grad school. After, you know, after I graduated Temple, that was the time of Kanye. I used to, like, for whatever reason, this is the old Kanye, not the Kanye that we know now. This is the backpack Kanye,
college dropout
Kanye. And, you know, in college, that was like 2000, early 2000, 2004 to be exact when I graduated. But I remember him and, you know, Rockefeller doing tours because there was like Petey Crack and all of those people that were rappers from Philadelphia. So in the like local like club scene and, you know, pretty much like college type venues, that they were there all the time. So I remember the Louis Vuitton Don with his, you know, polo and his long chain when he got the Rockefeller chain. So from that, I was just intrigued. And then I knew that once again, in my studies of history and migrant culture, that Chicago was another hub of the Black migration. So I wanted to go there to study it. So I went to Loyola University on the north side of Chicago. Most of my, you know, research and stuff was on the south side in Bronzeville, because that's where the Black culture initially started and was concentrated.
So knowledgeable. How important is it as a youth to go out there and experience life when you, if you have the opportunity to go and do that? And because it's taking a risk and taking a chance.
For me, I was always inquisitive. I always wanted to see and learn. So for me, I was like, I'm leaving. And I remember my high school counselor saying, Fallon, you have to have a safe school. Fallon, most people who leave come back within their first semester. And I said, well, I'm leaving. And my mother said she was paying for me to go to college, so she's going to make it happen. So, it did happen. So for me, I always tell youth that I encounter now, yes, there's a lot of resources for you to stay home. But if you have that spirit to want to leave, home is going to be home and you can always come back.
Mm. You're always going to be here. And that statistic of people coming back within a semester also. What advice would you give to people that are going out there so they can, you know, break that barrier?
I would say understanding financial aid, understanding what it costs, and securing what source is going to pay for that before you leave. I think a lot of times, and especially thinking back to the time when I went to school, you know, I have friends that it happened to. And I think, you know, we were first generation to go to college, so our parents really had no guidance around it. And there may have been, you know, like a meeting or what they will call a seminar, you know, for parents to attend to learn about FAFSA and things like that. But to really think about it in perspective, parents weren't understanding that piece. So they understood that the government was going to give X amount and then they made X amount. But longevity-wise, they didn't understand what it was going to take. So, yes, you can have that monthly payment, but then it also requires you to have money while you're there. So adding all of those things up, and then the cost goes up each year. So they probably didn't plan for that. So understanding, you know, what it potentially will cost and understanding that there's going to be a rate of change each year, and can you cover that? And applying for scholarships, that's something that I did. I remember, you know, I had senioritis, so I was in the scholarship book, sitting in my counselor's office when I was supposed to be in class. I was like, I'm already number 8, so what do I need to be in class for? But, you know, I was looking for scholarships. And I just think that being resourceful, and I feel like there's so many resources now, especially in some of the work that I do now, I'm exposed to what those resources are. And, you know, whenever I can share it, whether it's through social media, email with the school system, I'm going to make sure that they're spreading that information, because I want kids to be successful no matter where they are, whether they choose to stay in Connecticut or whether they choose to pursue their passions outside.
You're graduating, you're a grad. How and why do you come back to New Haven?
Well, I stayed in Chicago for a number of years. I was there for like 6 years. And then it was time to plan my high school reunion. Shout out to the class of 2000. I know they're like, when are you going to plan our reunion? It's coming. It's coming. We got caught up in COVID, so that would have been our 20th. So I'm going to do the 25th in 2025. But in, what was it, 2010, I started coming back and forth for class reunion stuff, planning like fundraisers and things like that. So, you know, seeing your classmates and your family, and seeing how, you know, there's community that has been established or has evolved. So, you know, I was here for the establishment, but to see it evolve and almost feeling like an outsider, and it's kind of made me, you know, a little homesick. And then I remember my grandmother saying to me, you know, it's time for you to come back. And I'm like, Nana, I like it in Chicago. She was like, no, it's time for you to come back. And so I was on the fence about it. And I had moved from the north side to the south side, South Shore. And it was like an unbelievable deal. Like I had got this huge apartment and it was right when they started gentrification. So they had gutted this building. Everything was brand new. It was so nice. And it was, you know, pretty inexpensive. So I lived there, you know, for maybe like a year or so. Neighborhood still like kind of seedy, but, you know, up and coming. And then someone broke into my house and I felt so violated that that ultimately was the push for me to come back home. Like, you know, I did what I had to do to, you know, make sure I was good with my job and, you know, doing job searches here in Connecticut. But I ultimately came back and did not have a job. I just was going to lean on faith. And, you know, early on I had, you know, some money that I put towards like my retirement because I started, you know, early in my career with a good job. And I said, well, I'm cashing that out. I got plenty more years to work, but I'm going to use that as like my little safety net and come back home. And so that's what I did. I ultimately came back home, no job, but I had contacts prior to going to grad school. I had worked at the hospital and I had worked all through my college years, like during the summer, during break. So, you know, they were ready to like offer me a job to come back. I had applied to like local institutions like Miracash and Job Corps. And ultimately, I ended up taking a job at Job Corps after being an employee for about, I would say about 6 months. And then, you know, I would say in 2011, that's when things changed for me. I started working full time. And then I said, you know, once I got settled, then I was going to turn my focus on getting involved in the community and giving back to the community that, you know, paved the way for me to experience so many things, both inside and outside of Connecticut.
Yale is one of the things that I see you a lot and involved, especially with the community. Mm-hmm. How did that position evolve and what does your position now entail that I see you always pushing job initiative?
So I would say, like I said, Job Corps was my first job that I got in 2011. I worked at Job Corps until 2015. That's when I took a position at Yale. It was through my neighbor at the time, Alderman Jeanette Morrison, who said, you know, they're starting this new initiative called New Haven Works. And if you want to get into Yale, you should go to New Haven Works. And so essentially that's what I did. Prior to coming back home, all of my early career was in higher ed administration. So the two universities that I worked for while I was in Chicago, I wanted to continue that once I came back to New Haven. So Yale was like the goal for me. So I had applied a number of times, never heard anything back, never got an interview. So Jeanette told me about New Haven Works. So I went to New Haven Works. There they assigned me a job coach. And I think, you know, at the time, you know, they were helping people get into certain roles. And so those roles were not really the roles that I was seeking. So I think that for them, you know, I joke that they would hate to see me coming because I was like, I want this job, and this job. And so it was really them that showed me like what types of jobs I should be applying to and how I needed to tailor my resume and my cover letter to speak to those jobs. And then later on down through our engagement, they created something called a meet and greet where you're able to really go before Yale University, their director of the hiring initiative, and their recruiters to sell yourself. And that's what I did. And I remember after that meeting, a recruiter at the time said, I'm going to find you a job. You know, I really wasn't optimistic at the time because I had been applying for so long. And I would say maybe a month and a half, 2 months later, she said, apply to these three jobs. And I applied to them, interviewed, and ended up landing a job. So in 2015, I started my journey at Yale University. I left a management position with Job Corps to become an administrative assistant. One thing I knew is that I was going to bet on myself because I had a plan and that, you know, I wanted to get my foot in the door and that through hard work and diligence that I would be able to work my way up. So I would say 9 years later, five positions later, a promotion later, I'm still at the university. I'm now supporting the program that brought me into the university. So having other roles, seeing the university from many different perspectives, starting out in a union job, understanding union jobs and the resources and benefits that you get, and then moving over to the managerial side, becoming a person who impacts the hiring process, and now to be able to take both of those experiences and give them as best practices to people who are seeking opportunity is something that I am grateful to be able to do day in and day out. There's not too many people that can say, I get up every day and I love what I do. And while it presents its challenges at time, the greater goal and the greater good that I see and the impact that it's making in the community is well worth it.
This is the Electric Drum 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Canelaro. This is Fallon Thomas. Let's start with the New Haven Club.
Yes. So, as I mentioned, one thing I wanted to do was give back. I had to get settled in my job, settled in my finances, and then I was going to find organizations that, you know, supported the things that I'm passionate about. I'm passionate about youth. I'm passionate about service. I'm passionate about professional development, education. So I would say, you know, my first foray into community orgs was through Carla Morrison. She had a group called Sisters of Today and Tomorrow that she still runs out of Atlanta and does programming here in New Haven from time to time. But I was just getting settled, and she was like, Fallon, can you help me with this and do this? And I'm just like, well, Carla, I'm trying to find a job, and I'm trying to get settled myself, but I can do what I can. And I did it a little bit, but I saw what her vision was, and I saw what she wanted to do in mentorship for young girls. And I said, you know, I really like this, but I know I can't dedicate my all to it. So once again, fast forward, got settled. The New Haven Club, I went to an annual event that they call their Founders Day. And one of the members at the church, she was a member at the time, and she invited my mom and I, and we went. And I remember just seeing, one, tons of people from the community, but seeing these ladies in red, just very sisterly and unified. And then I remember there was a award that they were given. There was the President's Appreciation, and that's given to a member who's shown dedication to the organization. And it was given to Andrea Lobo at that time. And just listening to her bio, to hear the impact that she had through so many orgs, I thought to myself, I hope that one day I could be half the woman that she is, to have that type of impact in the community. And I was asked to join, and I joined in 2017. And I've, you know, been there ever since. But that was the first organization that I was in. And it helped me to understand women's orgs. It helped me to take on roles of leadership, and it pretty much groomed me to be in the position that I am today as the president. So I started out doing youth. I was the youth leader for a little while, and then went on to become the vice president for 4 years, impacting programming over a period of time, and then became president. You know, it was the members that believed in me and, you know, voted me in to be president, and, you know, because it was the first, I will always give my all to that organization and its priority, where I see all my organizations at priority. But that was the one that gave me the foundation that I have today.
The New Haven Club is short for?
The National Association of Negro Business and Professional Women's Clubs Incorporated. And there's a number of clubs throughout the state, but we do have two in the city of New Haven. We have the New Haven Club, where we were the first, founded in 1944. We just celebrated 80 years. So shout out to all those who supported our lovely gala on November 9th. And there's Elm City, our sister club. And you'll often see us in the community doing things in tandem.
Oh, wow. And even at Yale, you were part about some clubs.
So Yale, we have what we call affinity groups.
Yep.
So there's 9 affinity groups. I like to call it something for everybody. And, you know, whether you subscribe or whether you're an ally, it's pretty much these spaces that allow us to build community, to provide professional development, and a place for social and cultural, you know, understanding. And I love it. I've been involved with YAA or YAAA, Yale African American Affinity Group, since I became employed at the university. One of the first events I went to was a social, and to see employees there and talking to them, and they are speaking about how long they've been at the university, 25 and 30 years. And I'm like, man, this is longevity. Like, I hope that one day I can have such an extensive career. But those same people became mentors and helped to guide me through my career at Yale. When there were times where I needed or wanted to pursue other opportunities, it was in that space where I you know, became aware of those opportunities. So not only does it provide that social and cultural, but it also provides the opportunity to grow within the university. And so now in my capacity as the community outreach and engagement manager for the hiring initiative, I support all of the affinity groups with helping them do community outreach in the community. So going into the community, showing them what Yale does internally, and being able to use their resources to support the community.
I see it at the Q House.
Yes. That's me every first and third Monday.
Can you talk a little bit about that initiative?
Yes. So it's an employment readiness initiative. And essentially what we do is we bring internal Yale departments that are hiring, external organizations that are hiring, and workforce development programs that provide support in becoming good candidates to come together and give a holistic perspective to the hiring process. So they're talking about the types of jobs they have, what it takes to qualify, and how to engage in the application process, whether it's a Yale job or a job that's outside of Yale. And then if it's a resource like Southern Connecticut or CT State Gateway that has non-credit courses that'll help you to get the skills you need to get a better job or to get a job, they're coming to talk about their supports and resources.
And in a collaboration with the Q House, how important is it for organizations to work together in this community?
So it's very important. The Q House was created as a space and almost a settlement space where people, once again, Black migrants coming to the North, settling in Dixwell to be able to go there, get information about jobs, get information about housing, have a social outlet, have a health outlet. And it's still doing the same things that it was initiated to do 100 years ago. So once again, shout out to them for celebrating 100 years this year. But in, you know, true form, it's still supplying all of those supports. So I'm just happy once again to contribute to society in a way that I've studied over the years. And knowing that, you know, in 100 more years, people are going to be talking about the work that we did there or are doing there now.
What other associations or clubs are you associated with?
So I would say another thing that I do at Yale is I manage the New Haven Promise internship program, the internships that we have across the university. So we partner with New Haven Promise. We're a large partnership or a large partner of theirs, being one of their largest funders. So to be able to provide young adults with internship opportunities to help them be successful in their careers, post-graduation is something that I love to do. Last year, we placed 85 interns across the campus. This year, I'm trying to place 100. So right now, I'm internally doing these information sessions or road shows to galvanize managers to take part in this process, to pay it forward, and to help, because essentially, you know, I'm promoting their jobs. They want to see, you know, candidates have a certain skill set. So why not plant the seeds early? So when they come back around, we can hire them. So Promise's motto is two through and back. I support the through and I support the back. And so outside of that, a number of organizations, am now expanding my reach to support other communities. I support the city of Ansonia through the Order of Eastern Star, Sheba Chapter Number 1. I support the city of Waterbury through the Waterbury Chapter of the Links Incorporated. So to be able to, one, impact communities that look like mine, and to be able to organize with like-minded women that have pulled their resources together to better their communities is something that I'm always going to be a part of.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Canelario. This is the Electric Drum. I can't even say enough. I'm in the presence of greatness, Fallon Thomas. Fallon, tell me a little bit about the award that you just received and what has that meant to you?
It's still sinking in, but it's good to be acknowledged. It was the Linda Lormer Award, and Linda Lormer was a vice president at the university. She retired after 30-something years, and while she was there, she did a number of initiatives within the university that also had an outward face to the New Haven community. And so they then bestowed an award in her honor that highlights employees that are doing above and beyond, that have a distinguished service to the university. And so it was an honor to be amongst 34 or 33 other people who were receiving this award. There were some that were individuals, and then there were teams of people that either had initiatives that provided cost savings to the university or innovative ways to do different, policies or procedures or practices to make work easier and more efficient. Also bringing like resources to the community, whether it was safety initiative through our fire safety or educational resources. Andrea Motto, who's someone that, you know, I love at the university. She works for the Peabody Museum and she has an educational program there. And also to see someone that came through her program be awarded in that same night. And her, the parents came up and thanked her to say if it wasn't for her, their son would not be where he is today. Receiving award for belonging. Belonging is a diversity initiative that we have. And him and his colleagues created a series of diversity talks across the university where people could talk about a sense of belonging. So, you know, to add to that work, I'm just truly honored. And it encourages me to do even more. So, you know, I look forward to what's going to happen next.
What message do you have for the New Haven community? Words of gratitude or any shout outs you want to give?
I would say, you know, shout out to my friends and family. They are so supportive. While I'm involved in all these things, you know, we're constantly raising money and having events. And they're supporting me by attending and, you know, spending their resources or volunteering. You know, I appreciate it. And I would just say, you know, get involved, find something that's meaningful to you and pay it forward because, you know, most people don't get to places on their own. It's someone that poured into them. So it's only right that you do it for someone else. And, you know, shout out to all the boards that I'm on. Shout out to those organizations that are supporting the city of New Haven, whether it's through the arts, the Schubert Theater. So please come out and see our shows. Whether it's New Haven Reads, we're supporting literacy around the community. You know, we're looking for volunteers. We need people to help our youth learn how to read and to increase their reading competency. So please support New Haven Reads. And the Boys and Girls Club, we have a new CEO who I'm so happy to support, Tamika Miller. And, you know, she came from the chamber, so she comes with a wealth of resources. So I'm just looking forward to her administration and supporting what she's going to do. But we need volunteers. We need resources there as well. So New Haven Reads, the Schubert Theater, the Boys and Girls Club, definitely come out and support us in whatever we're doing because we're paying it forward in this community.
Finally, plugs for, again, for your work initiative, events that are happening monthly.
So the New Haven Hiring Initiative, our monthly employment readiness series, we're at the Dixwell Q House every first and third Monday of the month. This program runs from September to May.
Wow.
6 p.m., Dixwell Q House, first and third Monday.
With that said, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
This has been the Electric Drum. I'm Jose Candelario, 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. And we just had with Ms. Fallon Thomas. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And like always to the general public, thank you for listening.